Hi everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We are glad you have joined us for our broadcast tonight. We are broadcasting live on Facebook, on YouTube, as well as Periscope. And we do that every Tuesday night from 8 to 9 Central, and we're glad that you are here watching with us. We have a special guest tonight. Vicki Tillman is back, and I'm so excited to have her with us again. Vicki is with Seven Sisters Homeschool as well. She does a whole lot of other things. I'll have her introduce herself, but thanks for coming on tonight, Vicki, and talking about teens and mental health with us tonight.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite topics. So thank you for inviting me back. I love talking with my SPED homeschool friends. So
Yeah. So one other recording that I did with Vicki, we talked about taking homeschool high school out of the box. So if you haven't listened to that recording, go back on our YouTube channel and find it. And that's a really good one too. So, but yeah, this whole month we're focusing on high school. And I actually did a replay of that at the beginning of the month when I was out for my surgery. So it's good to talk about this. And we've got a lot of more, I guess families are together more. Maybe we're noticing these things, but also we've got isolation issues and other things that are adding to mental health issues. So it's just a really good topic to discuss on many, many levels.
Yeah. So we won't be able to hit everything in hour's time, but maybe some of the things that have come to our attention, you know, in the last, like with the quarantines and then, you know, just teenagers in general, life is kind of hard for. So
especially if they have a really hard time self-motivating, and I know we're going to talk a lot about that. And I have one of those teenagers. She finally ran out of ideas for things to do, you know, at a certain time. Gotta build that up again. But so we're going to talk about a lot of things. But if you're joining us live, we want you to be part of our conversation. So if you have teens and are wondering what to do with them and you have questions, then throw them at us. We'd love that. Vicki and I were talking ahead of time and we said, well, we've got a couple ideas of what we're going to cover, but we're willing to take some rabbit trails and run with them. And so so definitely feel like, you know, you can just chime in and be part of this conversation. That's why we are live. Otherwise, we would record this and just stick this somewhere. So just to get our audience introduced to you, if they've never met you before, can you let them know just a little bit about what you do, your experience with homeschooling, as well as a counselor, too?
Yeah, so most people on the internet know me from Seven Sisters Homeschool and also from the Homeschool High School podcast. But in my in real life, my hat is I'm a licensed professional counselor. And so that's how I pay the bills. And I have been doing that for almost 3 decades now. Wow. It actually funded our homeschool habits for the 26 years that we homeschooled. So, so I've been through the teenage thing with 5 kids. And then as an academic advisor in our local community to hundreds of kids. So we've worked a lot with, you know, kids with special needs or kids who are going through tough times like depression and anxiety, or just teenagers who are going through teenager. And
is that a condition? I think a lot of parents would call it that.
So, and yeah, and you talk about like the times where teens get so unmotivated, and that might be a good place to just start.
Yeah, I think so, because I think that's a common thread that all parents at some point we hit with a teenager, whether they have special educational needs or not.
It's just part of the adolescent, and you know, honestly, it's part of the human condition. There are times where we just want to sit and veg. And I think we've seen that more since the quarantines and the COVID-19, that when people are stuck in the same place doing the same thing all the time, the energy it takes to come up with something to do or to do the things they need to do, it gets harder and harder.
Yeah, because the motivation depletes. I mean, you don't have as many incentives, I guess, to say.
Yeah, things to look forward to, just changes of scenery or changes of activity. Right. And so the sameness can be really demotivating. So teenagers, if you've noticed on the quarantine part of the lack of motivation, sometimes you can help kind of kickstart that by making some new things happen. And, you know, teenagers generally, when you make something new happen, they complain about it. It's their job to complain.
And it's their job
to make them do it. So you could give them a little reward or enticement for doing something new. And really, it doesn't have to be something big and fancy. It's just something they haven't done before or haven't done in a while. And that newness kind of reboots the brain and gets them going a little bit. So as far as the quarantine lack of motivation, that helps a little.
Yeah, with like contests. I know there's a lot of, you know, just organizations that were having contests. And so, you know, just to challenge your teen in an area maybe they have interest that they haven't done for a while, or a craft that, you know, to help other people. You know, there's lots of motivators. It isn't, it may be a prize, but it may be just, you know, the feeling good of that I've done something good for somebody.
And in so many states now, you can get out and about right now. The quarantines are lifting. So where it's safe, maybe go on a field trip, or you know, just to break up the sameness. And sometimes that's just enough to get the teens to remember that they are interested in things.
I realized on, was it Saturday or Sunday, I took my daughter to the grocery store because I can't lift anything. I can't reach up into the, you know, if I have to grab something from up high, I can't reach it. And so I brought her with me, and so she had her mask on, and I realized she hadn't been in a store since March. And so all of these, you know, dividers with 6 feet, she had no idea what to do. It was like going to a foreign country outside her door. So yeah, that's a field trip in itself.
Yeah, I know when the quarantine started lifting here, our local farm stand opened up, and I had not been out of the house for all those months, you know, except for to walk around our, we live on a farm, so I just walk around the farm, you know, and get some fresh air. It was so exciting to go to. Like, I was energized for the whole day after that trip to the farm market. So teenagers are people too, and they need change.
Exactly. Yeah, they do. Whether, in, like you said earlier, whether they oppose it when you bring it up, it's worth a little bit of nudging. And
And it really is, you know, it's a teenager's job to complain, and it's our job as much as we can to just nudge until they try it. So
those loving pushes,
We'll
call it. So, you know, that's great for a teen that really is in a good place, and really that's all that they need. But what about those teens who are really underneath their, this negative self-talk has been going on? And so it's almost like you put a hurdle on top of a hurdle.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, teenagers are in the developmental phase where they're developing metacognition, which is the ability to think about how they think and think about how they view themselves. And it's a, like a deeper level of thinking. And generally, when they hit that, all of a sudden they're flooded with self-doubt because they don't really know who they are and what, you know, what they're about, and they feel very lost. So, you know, the task of teenagers are to kind of discover who they are. But if they don't know it's okay to be wondering and to feel kind of lost, they will chew themselves up with negative self-talk, because they will notice the differences between them and all the young people on television, or you know, the
people that aren't talking about what they're thinking inside, and they're all thinking the same thing.
And that's the, and all teenagers are going through it at some level or the other. And so that they're all just really dealing with the questioning themselves and not feeling good about themselves. And some kids will get to the other side of that quicker than others. And unfortunately, kids, especially with special needs, if they are noticing some abilities that some of their peers have and they are struggling with, that they can really get stuck. on that negative self-talk. And
right, and especially those things as a culture that we elevate mm-hmm. and we make front, you know, mm-hmm. decision makers about whether your worth is good or not, like
yes.
you know, your looks or how well you do math, or you know, it's all these things that we put on pedestals. And yet kids, if you give them the time and you motivate them in the right way, they can realize they have gifts in a lot of places.
That's right. You know, I always tell the young people I work with that all kids are gifted.
Mm-hmm.
They are gifted in how God made them to be gifted.
Exactly. And,
you know, our culture, you're right, it's our culture tends to really reward the kids who are, you know, high-powered academians or mm-hmm. Athletes or musicians.
Right.
And so they get lots of attention, or they won the Bible Bowl at church. And
yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you're a kid who's got like average IQ or some ADHD or, you know, some looks that are different,
right.
It's really hard for kids at adolescent level. So as parents, it's really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
To help our kids to know that all kids are gifted, like God has a plan mm-hmm. for each kid, and we're not all supposed to be, you know, professors at a university. They're broke anyway. they're that not all supposed to be athletes, because even the high school athletes, most of them are not going to grow up and be professional athletes.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
mm-hmm.
they're not all supposed to be rock stars or, you
right.
know, you know, famous actors or actresses. Like most people glorify God and fulfill who they are supposed to be by doing the ordinary things of life. That's how God made us to be. And when we mm-hmm. teach our kids to really notice, like, hey, you're good at figuring out how to fix things or bake mm-hmm. cupcakes or be nice to the younger siblings. Like,
right.
you know, the daycare workers and the plumbers and, you know, the people that make America run are just the normal kids or the kids who have overcome mm-hmm. some, you know, difficulties to be able to you know, fulfill their place.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I did a talk on biblical encouragement for the special needs parent. And the thing that I pointed out is God says perfection is what's in the Beatitudes, not what, you know, the person on YouTube that's getting all these millions of views. And, you know, that if we're moving our kids towards eternity, you know, those are the things that we have to say, this is the coolest thing about you.
Yes. Yeah. That's beautiful. I need to look that up and watch that. Yeah.
It puts our focus back on what is really important, because we can get, even as parents, really hung up on the things of the world and be pushing our kids to find that thing that you're good at. And well, maybe the things that God made your child good at. And I know with my adopted siblings, some of them were in wheelchairs. They were tube fed. You know, they could hardly even speak or communicate, but God made them and they have purpose.
Yeah.
And it's the beauty that we each have.
Yeah. And I think as we can train our kids to notice that when God makes someone, sometimes their purpose is to be,
mm-hmm.
that each of us have these purposes that God has us here for, and to love that and to see that in themselves and other people. You know, to look for those things that God made,
mm-hmm.
that as they grasp hold of that, mm-hmm. teens tend to come alive.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they can dream bigger dreams, because they're not based on who I am anymore and what I can manufacture, because that's really hard. I mean, we live in that society is what you are, what you do, instead of you are who you know, you were made to be.
So I have, you know, I've worked with so many teens over the years, but I remember one young woman I have known since she was elementary school. And that child, we didn't think she would ever learn to read. She's so much ADHD and dyslexia going on.
Mm-hmm.
And what her mom did so well for her is help her to look for the God's gifts in her, you know, and taught her to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And taught her to talk well to herself and talk to herself about possibilities. Like, reading is hard, but I can work on it and I can learn to do it and I can do well. Do you know what that young woman, I ran into her the other day.
Yeah.
She is in graduate school in psychology. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like she was able to find that within her. Mm-hmm. That was her calling. Right. She just had to learn how to believe in God's plans for her. And as she was able to do that, the coolest thing is now she has a gift that she can give to other young people.
Yes,
and that's how God works.
Yeah. It's those struggles you go through. And that's a really good thing to point out to our teens, you know, and I share a lot of times with my children, just my struggles in a lot of things, because I want them to understand just because I can do these things now doesn't mean I did them well before, and everybody pushes through them. And well, my kids know how I looked on videos when we first started, so they know practice makes you perfect, or at least better.
Well, my guiding quote, you know, I love quotes, and my very favorite quote is from G.K. Chesterton. He said, "Anything worth doing is worth doing badly." And so, you know, when teens have permission to just not do things well, but give it a try and believe in themselves, you know, some of those things are going to really come alive in.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a trap that we can fall into, that, well, I've signed you up for this, or, you know, and get to jump in with both feet instead of just like dabbling and letting them dabble and letting them pull their feet out and say, I don't want anything to do with this.
Yeah.
Because that is, I think that practice has allowed my teens and now young adults to really figure out who they are without feeling like there's some sort of punishment involved in you in stepping away and backing out because it just wasn't the right thing.
Yeah. And, you know, when you look in human development books, they tell you, you know, teens need to try on hats. They need to dabble.
Yeah.
They need to, because they are finding out who they are and what God made them to do. Mm-hmm. And by trying on lots of things, especially things they don't know anything about, you know, some of that they will discover that God has opened that door for them and wants them to do something with. Mm-hmm. But it takes a lot of trying and saying, nah, I'm not going to keep up with this. So.
Right. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, because when my son came home from welding school, he finished high school, he went to welding school, and he worked as a welder for a while, and he goes, I don't think God's calling me to do this. And then he felt bad that he had gone and got this certification, and he was, you know, working as a welder, and then wanted to go to college. I said, if you're going to college to be an engineer, being a welder is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, he just actually applied for SpaceX as a welding engineer.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool.
So I was like, because he just graduated from college. So I was they're not hiring biomedical engineers, but you have welding and engineering.
Yeah.
Go for it. So, but yeah, there's never a waste.
Mm-mm.
And I think we get so caught up in that, we've got to do this and this and this, and this is our steps to get our children to where we can launch them, and everything's going to be perfect from that point on.
Yeah.
Instead of, it's just trying things out and living life with them.
Yeah, it's not a race.
Yeah.
And, you know, for us moms, we can do our teens and ourselves a favor if we don't compare ourselves and our success, you know, with against other homeschool moms. Is, you know, it's our job to do what God has given us to do with a grateful heart.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's not easy.
Right.
But that's why God said about 100 times in scripture, give thanks, you know, like it's sometimes an act of will, but in our gratitude, we're modeling something good for our kids. So.
Right. Yeah. That's a good step for parents. I was thinking, you know, as far as what could parents do if they know that self-talk is going on, what would be some proactive things? Because oftentimes your kids will say, well, yeah, you're going to say that as mom or dad.
Yeah.
Is there any other things we can do that might help in that area?
Yeah. So what teens, you know, we talked about dabbling. So to have a lot of different experiences. So they're having communication or just being around, you know, other, especially adults, especially if they're kind adults, you know.
Right.
So volunteer work or, you know, teaching alongside in a Sunday school or something like that, where they're around someone who can then say, I see this in you. And I encourage all teens at some point to take on the project of writing a paper about themselves. And to part of that paper being interviewing a few people outside of the family, well, like grandma and grandpa they could do, but, you know, a boss, you know, at a volunteer job, or, you know, the old lady they mow the lawn for or something. And what, you know, what do they have to say about them? And teens find that very challenging, but they are always so glad that they did it.
Yeah.
So
that's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's that opposite perspective, because we get that mirror view, but we can only see from one perspective. I think I read a book or heard something from somebody. They said you need to have somebody who can see you from a different vantage point than you can see yourself.
Yeah.
And that's when you start to realize just how different you are and really how valuable you are.
Yeah. One of our seven sisters, Marilyn, was teaching a writing class to our local homeschool community. Mm-hmm. And there was this one young man who just, he didn't live up to the family athletic, you know, like reputation. They were all big baseball players and all. And so he was feeling kind of lost. Mm-hmm. And he just, you could just see he was in a self-doubt place. Mm-hmm. And so he was in Marilyn's writing class and he turned in a paper and, Marilyn wrote a little note at the top of the paper. I see potential in your writing. Mm. That young man grabbed hold of that and he worked. So that one little positive thing, he grabbed that and he worked so hard at English through high school and he went to college as an English major.
Wow.
So like he just saw. And I think the last time I heard he was in some journalism, like newspaper or magazine or something somewhere on staff. So, you know, like looking for that feedback from other grownups is so, so powerful for teens, which means we have to kind of shake them loose and get them around people and in a way that's appropriate for them. So
it really is. It's hard and well, and especially in, you know, the environment we're in right now, but, there's people around that still can speak into your student's life and work with them. And
even in the COVID-19, you know, they're limited. Our friend Meryl, who has the Homeschooling with Technology podcast, she did a whole episode on volunteer opportunities that are digital. Look for Homeschooling with Technology podcast and you can get some ideas for that. So anyway, that's a way to get teens to be able to see, like you said, that other perspective on them. And it really does help. It's hard, but it helps.
Definitely. So I want to go one layer deeper than that. Now we have a lot of kids that were maybe in public school or around other kids or, you know, around just, and they've had things said in the past to them and those words don't stop. So how do we as parents help them to work beyond those cyclical messages of you know the being bullied or just talked down to about everything that they struggle with?
And bullied teens, you know, kids who have, they've been in a situation where they've been bullied for more than like one time. It can really sow so much self-doubt in them and fear. So generally when I'm working with a bullied kid, the first thing we do is start healing the anxiety. It's that rather than just directly address the bullying, we kind of bolster them up, kind of build some infrastructure. And so what I do with teens is to teach them some basic biology that helps them feel stronger. Because if they feel stronger, then we can go to the emotional stuff. Like they, if they start noticing their body is feeling better. Mm-hmm. So I teach them five things. So the first thing is to drink water, because teenagers don't drink water, but you know, like this morning.
I know I bought my kids these huge water bottles, and I find my daughter is now drinking more water just because she has this big bottle and it sits on her desk now and it's there.
And really is, yeah, if you can find a way to make it easy. But what I explain to teens is when you're under stress, you attempt to not listen to what your body says. And so teenagers, well, grownups too, if they're kind of anxious, sometimes part of the anxiety is they're dehydrated. And that, you know, when your stomach growls, it's your body saying, I'm hungry, I need some food. Sometimes part of the anxiety is your little brain cells telling you, I'm dehydrated, I need something, give me some water. Mm-hmm. And so when you give them the use, you know, make a habit of drinking water, then they start feeling, I'm not kidding, it reduces the anxiety and waking up in the morning and feeling refreshed.
Yeah,
because you have enough hydration. I am not kidding. It reduces some of the anxiety, and that just builds infrastructure then that you can do the emotional healing on. The other, the next thing is I tell them that they need to eat fruits and vegetables. And, you know, for some teenagers, that's a hard thing. But when I explain to them that their neurotransmitters are made out of the micronutrients in fruits and vegetables. So neurotransmitters are in charge of energy and mood and smarts and concentration and all the things that make us think and do. Right. And if we don't have our fruits and vegetables, then our brain is like in a car trying to drive down the road, but there's no gas in it. So it needs these fruits and vegetables. So water and fruits and vegetables. And then they need exercise. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like your daughter can do the ropes.
The aerial silks, yeah.
Yes, oh my gosh, you know, you too. That is something else. But all teens can do something. You know, if they're in a chair, they can do some upper body work. Maybe there's always something where you can move some muscles. And basically, if a kid is able to be active and run around or go for hikes or climb silks or, you know, like to move their body, that's good. If they can only do little things. Anytime you move a muscle, the nerve attached to that muscle fires a little zap of dopamine. And dopamine's a mood enhancer. It literally, you know, when you work out, when you're through working out, you feel emotionally better because you got all this dopamine. So, and it also burns off some of the stress hormones. So you get kind of a double good thing from it. So it's water, the fruits and vegetables and exercise, and then sleep rhythms. And this is so, so hard for teens.
Yes.
that basically they need, you know, like research wants you to aim for around, you know, 8 to 10 hours for teens. You know, sometimes you have to fight them to get eight. But if you can train them to go to bed at a reasonable hour and get up before noon.
Before noon. I know, there's many years we didn't start homeschooling till noon.
My kids were. I mean, we got to be real. And especially, you know, the kids have been quarantined, so everybody's off rhythm.
I know. But what day of the week is it? Which week is it? What month are we in?
But there is something that the body does when it's dark and you're sleeping that helps keep the biorhythms healthy. And when your biorhythms are healthy, then your body can be healthier. That makes your emotions healthier. And you know, sometimes what I do is I ask the teens, let's do a 2-week challenge, and you go to bed by midnight and get up by 10 every day, you know, for 2 weeks, and let's see if you like it or not. And they generally do, and they'll fall off of it, you know, here and there, but generally they it establishes a pattern that literally it makes their biorhythms. That means all the manufacture of neurotransmitters and hormones and all works better. So that's right. So water and fruits and vegetables and exercise and sleep patterns. And the last one is oxygen. And I love oxygen because it's free.
Yes.
So
Yeah, and I realized the power of deep breathing. I didn't even realize how connected it is with your lymphatic system to clean and detoxify your body.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah, so yeah, with my cancer research and all the lymph nodes, so your lymph nodes drain from your upper part of your body, kind of through your armpits and then your groin, and then it comes back around into where your diaphragm is. So when you do deep breathing, you actually push those toxins that have been through that entire system then into your urine and out of your body. So if you're drinking lots of water, they actually say even jumping will help activate that, but deep breathing is another thing that's really good. So that's why meditation. God tells us to meditate.
Uh-huh.
You breathe at the same time. I've been using an app called Soul Space. And they tell you to deep breathe, and then they go through a scripture verse, and it's been really good for my stress.
Yeah. And there's, I love that about the lymph. So you taught me something new. I'm excited. Yeah. So, what I tell the teens, because I didn't know about lymph stuff, so now I'm going to add that, is that oxygen is the only thing that can attack the cortisol, the stress hormone, that, you know, and kids who have been bullied have a bigger dose of the stress hormone. Kids who've been on quarantine have a bigger dose of stress hormone that just stays in their body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that cortisol is really, really useful when a lion is chasing you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not much else. And if we don't burn it up, it stays in our body, keeping us ready to run from the lions. Mm-hmm. But it's an inflammatory. So it reduces our immune system. Mm-hmm. It makes us feel anxious. You know, it's just the biology part of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so when kids do some deep breathing, or as moms do deep breathing, we are actually reducing, we're chipping away at the cortisol load that's in our blood, or puddling on our muscles. So it turns into lactic acid.
Lactic acid. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So now you got your lymph glands and your muscles.
Oxygen kills cancer too. So if you got that running in your family.
It's a win. And it clears your thinking too. Mm-hmm. Lowers your blood pressure. One time, I don't remember what I was really stressed out about, but it was a bad day and I was really stressed, and I had to drop by the doctor to get my blood pressure taken for an insurance policy that I don't know.
Something.
And so I dash into the doctor's office and they do my blood pressure, and it was high, and I got my blood pressure not high. Mm-hmm. And so I said, go out of the room and give me 2 minutes. And so I sat in there and I did my deep breathing and I told myself some jokes. Uh-huh. And then they came back in and they took it again, and it was right where it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So oxygen is a good thing. Laughter is another good thing.
It is. Yep.
So, you know, definitely. This scripture says a merry heart does good like a medicine. Mm-hmm. And it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are great. Yeah. It's, it's practical, but yet we forget that we're in this rush of doing things and, you know, trying to fix stuff with, you know, new stuff we have to go back to the old stuff, the original stuff.
Yeah.
So that's good.
And God really, he made us spirit, soul, and body. And when you start out at the very concrete things in the body, then, mm-hmm. you know, physically teens are feeling better. And then you can start working on the pain. You know, who do they believe they are? What is the pain for the bullying? What are the other stressors in life? And, you know, for moms and teens, it's mostly just letting them talk.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's just letting them talk and not particularly fixing it.
Yeah.
Just letting them talk. So I always tell everyone the three magic words are, that's really hard.
Yeah.
Now, if teens ask for your advice, you can give a wise mom advice, but we don't want to be critical. We don't want to point all the things they did wrong. Well, you should have done this, or you should have done that. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be embarrassed about them. You want to just give them encouragement and help them remember that God has plans for them. And as they keep trying things and talking the truth to themselves, and to teach them how to talk the truth, I will tell them, you know, to learn Revelation 1:8. I mean, 1:6. Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
One of the that God made us like himself, a nation of kings and priests. Mm. So if God made you a king and priest, then you must be king and priest. That must be pretty cool. If God sees that in you, then it's your job to start finding out what that looks like in you here on earth, right, and to fulfill that. And so when teens have something to grab hold of, you know, so they have truth that they've gotten from other grown-ups, they've got the truth of God's word for them, and the things that you see in them help them discover, then that is a lot of healing. A lot of healing, especially for the self-talk and the anxiety related to that.
Yeah, I found that the more good that you put in, instead of combating the bad, it's like you overload the good, and the bad just kind of seems to go away. You know, it's you don't need to deal with it, because you, once you bring it up, you're bringing it back up and refocusing on it. I mean, it's good to find closure on those things, but it sometimes takes time.
Yeah, and you know, kids who've been bullied need to tell their story. They need to be heard.
Yeah,
and so that's. That's part of the healing process, but that's not the end of the healing process. The end of the healing process is them discovering themselves. So, and sometimes kids, when they've been bullied enough or been through enough stressful things, can really benefit from doing some counseling. And, you know, and here on the East Coast, a lot of the teens think it's pretty hip, you know, well, my counselor said this and my counselor said that. Sometimes the boys are a little slower to warm up to it. But, you know, usually a couple of sessions with a counselor, they can just kind of like dump and get the things that have been stirring inside of them. And sometimes the like I will say the same things that parents say. And the teen believe me, and they don't believe the parents, and that's just
Well, I had a babysitter when my boys were younger, because I would be speaking, and then I would have her come in, and then I started, you know, mentoring her, doing Bible studies, and her mom said the same thing. She goes, "Peggy, you say the same thing I say, and she believes you." So, but yeah, it's they need especially kids that are external processors, to have somebody that will listen without being judgmental, because then they actually realize what's in their brain. They've been processing it probably without even realizing it. And not knowing how to process it till they get it out.
Well, and for teens who, especially if they have the ADHD, the impulsivity, sometimes having a counselor that they can tell their stories, like, I don't know why I got in trouble, you know, that having an outside party helps them to be able to see themselves in another way and to learn some self-monitoring and some self-regulation skills that mom and dad can say, but a lot of times they just need to hear it freshly from outside.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because they have such, I heard it explained once that ADHD is like having like 12 different tabs open on your, you know, on your computer at the same time and trying to juggle them all. It doesn't work. And so, to just, because you're speaking, I mean, as a counselor or just a third party, you're speaking just to one direct thing, and you're making them focus on that. That makes sense. Erica commented, she said, "I like the advice, drink water, breathe deeply, move to elevate the mood."
And all of those are free, and free is a good price for things.
Free is a good price, exactly. Yes, and if you can find fruit and vegetables they like, and, you know, an activity that they, and that, you know, I think that's, it's stressed so much with these athletics, but yet, there, like you pointed out, there's very few high school athletes that will do what they did in high school the rest of their life. And it's a benefit to your student, even if they are an athlete, to find something for them that would be a lifelong sport. Versus just, football is not going to last until you're in your 40s or 50s.
And, you know, if it's nothing else but hiking, you know, they can carry hiking with them everywhere. But, you know, any kind of movement is movement. And, you know, some teens will really get into it, and they're going to do, you know, fitness and weightlifting and all those things. And, you know, that's cool for them. But even kids who don't like to move are going to benefit from some kind of movement.
So. Yeah.
You can tell movement or chores. Chores is movement.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I keep saying, well, you can take the dog for a walk, clean up the cat box, or so it's getting you out of that chair. So we touched on a little bit of anxiety, but I do want to bridge that gap to depression. How do we know when we've our child has moved to that point? That we're now getting to a point where it's the sinking is happening.
And it's such a common thing in our American culture, because we just have a weird lifestyle and a lot of pressure on teens. So for teenagers, it looks a bunch of different ways if there's actually depression going on. So it's really good to observe your kids and just kind of know who they are. So, you know, some kids will just tell you they feel sad all the time. And if I could say this to the folks who are listening, if your teen says they're sad all the time, don't say, well, I don't think you're depressed.
Right.
Just say, I hear you saying you're sad. Just please don't crawl in your kid's head and tell them whether or not they're depressed. Just listen. So some will tell you that, but some don't even know, because teenagers don't know how to read themselves well sometimes. So they can't tell you they're feeling sad. They don't know that, but all they feel like doing is gaming all day, or they disappear in their room and you don't see them all day, or they fight with their siblings all the time, and it's way worse than it used to be. I mean, all siblings get irritating with each other,
but it's above and beyond.
Or they had friends and they got into big fights with all the friends, and now they're not talking to anybody. Or it could look like, you know, you're catching them on one of their social media, just friending a whole bunch of creepy adults, you know, like needing some positive feedback.
Right.
So Leah Neiman, if you need to help with kids in tech, LeahNeiman.com is my go-to person for that. So if you see them like harming themselves, you see suspicious kind of scratches or cuts, or they start giving away stuff, things like that. You go like, whether or not they're telling you they're sad, they're sad. If they can't sleep at night and they just tell you night after night they can't sleep, or they want to sleep 24/7, you know, so the sleeping is way off. If they have a dramatic change in eating, so they, aren't eating, I'm not hungry, I'm never hungry, I don't like anything. Or they start like carb binging. That all of those things are ways that teenagers kind of act out depression. So they may not be able to say it, but they act out. Or they used to love something and then they don't like it anymore at all. In fact, they don't like anything. Everything's bad. It's all boring. And so that loss of interest in things. It's really kind of like a puzzle you put together. It's really hard to, like adults, we can go down a checklist.
Exactly.
Like the diagnostic manual says this. But teenagers are just so complex because they're so in this identity development. That we just have to look at a package of symptoms. So the cool thing about depression is you do the same things you do with anxiety. Is you build the water, the fruits and vegetables, the exercise, the sleep patterns, the breathing. Then you heal the sad. That's really, really useful for a counselor to come in. But for a parent's part, what they can do is actually sit down with a kid and have conversations. Now, with teenagers, a lot of times they won't sit across the table and have a conversation. But if you put them in the car and
go, I was going to say, that's a perfect spot.
And go for a drive, they will open up. Now, you can't let them bring their earbuds with them or anything. That in a car, most teenagers will open up. I have never figured that one out. but just to let them talk about whatever kind of goofball thing is happening, because it's not so much what they're saying, it's that they're using words.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that there's actual healing in words, even if it's not about the sad, it's just words. Another thing parents can do is to do creative things. So art, you know, drawing or sculpting or sewing or building birdhouses or things where you use your creative mind. So to sit together and do some projects where creativity is engaged, that releases some therapeutic hormones. So there's some healing just in that. So, and to create some positive experiences, you know, just like we handle the quarantine, you know, go do some new things. And sometimes just the breaking up the ordinary and doing some talking and, you know, doing your biological infrastructure, that will be enough.
It just kind of breaks that.
Because our bodies by and large want to heal, you know, so the serotonin, which is low on when a teen has depression, you know, that wants to heal. Now, sometimes there's a biological deficit, like the brain just doesn't make serotonin like it should. And that just, it's just like diabetes, you know, that if someone is, you know, juvenile diabetes, it's their body just is not making insulin the way it's supposed to. The neurotransmitters are the same. And those kids will have to learn how to manage that. And, you know, they may need medication. So that's the whole.
Yeah, and that was my whole teen thing was the serotonin. But I was on anti. I had a whole series of things in my life, my younger life, that caused anxiety from a very young age, and so they medicated me a lot, and it killed a lot of my gut bacteria. And because serotonin is produced in your gut, I found that when I healed my gut, my depression went away.
All right, and that's so important.
Same thing happened to my both my sons because they, of course, inherited my gut bacteria. That's what mom does. And so, yes, they both went through little bouts when they were younger with depression, but it was completely related to our gut being unhealthy.
Yeah, along with the fruits and vegetables, eating things that help that good gut biome is really a good idea. So. When I go to continuing eds, they say that yogurt and kimchi are some of the best things that you can eat. So what do you like to do?
I ferment a lot of food myself. So I make my own sauerkraut and kombucha and so, and like I was just on, they put me on massive doses of antibacterial medication. So I was taking the pharmaceutical grade, tablets of probiotics for a while. But yeah, you have to counteract that because your body needs to have that. And in our normal food, we don't get enough good bacteria.
And our Western diet does not allow for that. So there's so many things we can learn. And, you know, as moms, we can learn that and teach that to our teens so that they are prepared for handling their lives. So, yeah, teens are complex, but they are so worth investing in.
And I think the list you gave was the best list I've ever heard of how to find depression in a teenager. Because, you know, most things that I've read in the past, they're like, well, it's just different in every child. So, and it is. I mean, it's not a comprehensive list, but it was a very good list to start from, definitely. So, you know, as we're kind of wrapping up last, I guess we got a little over 10 minutes, but the whole thing with isolation and our kids and not knowing really how long this is going to go. And I think as a teenager, this is a whole different life than they had expected to have. And there's so many things that they're not being able to do. That, you know, and there are milestones like prom and, you know, even just, you know, certain activities with friends and summer camps and all those things. And how do we walk through those with our kids? I mean, really, it's like dying to a lot of dreams.
That's not an exaggeration. You know, I've talked to so many high school seniors who didn't get their proms and didn't get to walk across the stage and get a diploma. And, you know, there's so many losses, so many, you know, sports they didn't get to do or concerts that they were going to sing in and, you know, church activities, missions trips and all that they wanted to take. So that, you know, those are big, big losses. And we have to recognize them for teens as grief, that they will experience grief and there will be sadness. And, you know, hopefully it's a passing sadness and doesn't linger. But there's sadness. And so one thing we can do as moms is let them process that. Like, I'm so upset that I don't get to do this.
Right.
And instead of saying, yeah, but you get to do this.
Yeah.
We can say that's really hard and just allow the pain to be. Now, if they wallow in it for too long and you just have to watch your teen, then you have to teach them positive thoughts. You know, but to recognize, you know, like, Jesus wept when his friends were sad about Lazarus dying. Like, God recognizes tears and he does not despise those. And we can be with our teens in the grief. And then we can also help them look for hopeful things. And you know, rather than you want to say, okay, you can't do this, but I'm going to give you this. But instead, just introduce it as a different idea. Like, you know, like,
oh, I like that. Yes.
You know, okay, why don't we try this rather than this as a substitute? Because there's nothing that's
right.
Can't. But we're going to just go do this because we need something to do. And to find some things that are appropriate for whatever stage of, you know, quarantine that you are in, and let them to get out and do new things and to create dreams for themselves, you know, for the future.
Right.
One of the exercises I learned from the University of California does this absolutely marvelous research on how to feel happier. And it doesn't cost money, your medication, you know, so it's simple things people can do. And it's really cute because it's a secular institution, but they're the ones that discovered that gratitude is actually good for your brain. So they do gratitude exercises. But one of the cool exercises that they suggest is to have a journal, and for every day for 2 weeks, you write down, pick a time in the future and just write for a few minutes about if you had a magic wand and life was just perfect, this is what life would be like when you're 60 or 25 or, and just write and just let the imagination run free. Teenagers the first day generally complain about it. And then after that, they start having a really good time. And what happens is in doing that, they're reawakening their prefrontal cortex, which is their dreaming and planning and logic part of their brain. So it really is like there's a purpose behind the exercise. But once you get them over the complaining phase of the first day or two, they really generally have fun. And sometimes as they're writing, because they do it as daily for a couple of weeks, they come up with some ideas that are so much fun. They want to explore that. And so it may be the seeds of some actual dreams.
Well, that's really cool. Yeah, it's hard to dream for yourself. And I can see how that could help a lot. Actually, I'm reading a book right now on how to live as a dreamer for God. So,
how neat.
It's a very good book, but yeah, I don't have it on my desk right now, but yeah.
So have you learned anything about dreaming for God so far?
No, I mean, I'm only getting to the beginning of his story and how he messed up a lot, but
so I've learned it. Yeah. Yeah.
But just, yeah, the tough side of ministry and how God kind of drags you through the dirt before he gives you the ability to even, you know, experience some of those dreams. And I think that's a lot of what our teenagers are going through is, you know, the teenage years are just a lot of like stomping through muck. And, you know, like you say, it's trying to figure out who you are. You know, you're not the swamp monster when you get out, but just what's underneath there. And it is difficult to and having people around you and to guide you, like you were talking about, is so important. And and being a sounding board as a parent is what I kept hearing you say over and over again in our discussion, instead of a megaphone.
Yeah, good analogy. Really good. Yeah.
Because we can do that, and we can say, well, you're doing this good, and you know, you're not doing that so well, and you know, and being so judgmental, and and yet to instead just build our teens up.
Yeah, and in doing that, we really will benefit if we monitor our own anxiety and fears.
Yes.
Because we can so easily project our anxieties, like, I'm so worried about my kid, and and even if you don't mean to. But as we trust God, we can speak the way God would speak to our kids. And it's a hard job for moms of teens. It's really hard. Mm-hmm. So it keeps us humbling ourselves before God and asking God to help us be vessels of, you know, his faith and his ideas and his hope to our teens.
That's so good. I want to give you a little bit of opportunity to talk about Seven Sisters before we go, so that I know I got your... And Seven Sisters has been sponsoring all of our broadcasts this month, except for this episode. I wanted to give Vicki just a straight run since you sponsored all the other ones this month for the high school. But, yeah, can you tell us a little bit about
Seven Sisters? I'll tell you a little bit about our roots. So... Seven Sisters is actually six of us gals who homeschooled our kids together. So only two of us are biologically related, but we're all sisters in the Lord. So, and our kids grew up together. So, you know, practically family. So it's really a blessing of homeschooling to work together. And we taught, you know, our co-op classes and our umbrella school classes and, you know, did so much together over the years. One of our Seven Sister Marilyn, her son married Seven Sister Sabrina's daughter. So, I mean, we're talking about a match, is what we are. So as our kids were getting close to graduation, you know, we could see that, you know, our responsibility directly to our kids was going to come to an end. We felt really like the call of Titus 2 to go back and help the younger women. And so we started Seven Sisters so that we could continue to minister to the community and be a support system in that way. So as the older women. So there's six of us. So who's the seven sister? That's you. So everybody that hangs out with us is a seven sister. So, and we always invite everyone to join our Facebook group where people just, it's very low key, you know, can ask questions or have simple discussions. So that's a good thing. And to visit us at sevensistershomeschool.com. And we have blog posts. I was on the dashboard today. There's over 1,000 blog posts.
Oh, wow.
We have, you know, everything from, you know, how to do a transcript or plan your 4 years or deal with depression in teens or,
so you know, much practical. And your curriculum is so practical, too. I just, that's what I love about it. I sent my daughter a couple. I'm giving her options right now of what she wants to do next year.
Yeah, we have electives like psychology and human development and early childhood education. And we have financial literacy and lots of literature, so English and American and world and great Christian writers and C.S. Lewis and writing, because writing is the key for all kids and a speech curriculum. All the things we've used with our kids and our teens in the local community have vetted and they say, you know, this stinks, take this out. And the way, because all of our kids, you know, between the six of us, we had everything from severe learning disabilities to, you know, PhD bound kids. So we learned that we needed to level the curriculum so that a you know, a struggling or average learner could use the curriculum, but also a kid who is college bound could use it. So there's always instructions on how to make it a meaningful, not a boring, because we don't believe in busy work because the teens told us. They don't believe in busy work, so we don't
good
have
for
that.
Them. So it's been tested out.
and we had the kind of teens when they were growing up that would let us know. So
yes, I have those too.
Yes.
That's good. Well, thank you, Vicki. This has been great. I
it's
appreciate
lovely
everything
to be here.
And appreciate Seven Sisters so much. And I got to actually meet some of the seven or the six sisters and be the seventh.
Yes.
Last year, that was very fun.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah, so this has been a great discussion. We definitely went on some rabbit trails, but they were very good ones. So I hope it has blessed you as much as it's blessed me, definitely. Yeah, and thank you again for being a sponsor for our broadcasts in June. And next week is our last week. We're going to be talking about high school, and I'm going to be talking with Barb Blansky. She, her thing is transition planning. And how to make that plan when your student starts high school and is trying to work through and to get to the goal that they want. And how do you do that? And she's very practical about that. So we're going to talk to her about enhancing your teen's ability to transition well. That's all of our goals, I hope. So, and it doesn't matter whether they're still going to be in your house or they're going to be headed off to college or somewhere in between there. It's all still important. All right. So we'll see you next week for that broadcast. Thanks again, Vicki. And thank you all for joining us. And
thanks, everybody.
We'll see you then. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.